Hello, my name is Racheli Lovglass. Welcome to Torah Simecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. Today we'll be studying Sefer Nehemiah Perek Yud Bet, the 12th chapter. Yesterday, Perek Yud Aleph reported that a tenth of the Jewish population of Judea was selected via lottery to live in Yerushalayim with an eye towards ensuring the city's ongoing security. The bulk of that chapter reviewed the list of those who settled in Jerusalem. Chapter 12, which we're discussing today, enumerates the Kohanim and the Levim, the priests and the Levites, who settled in Judea at various junctures during Shivat Zion and the entire era. Even though there are numerous difficulties regarding the chapter, we're going to limit ourselves only to some of those observations. It's not totally clear why this perek appears specifically at this juncture during the book. One possibility, and this actually applies to chapter 11 as well, is simply that these lists don't really have an obvious placement. Since the details collected in Nehemiah chapter 13 are going to be appropriate material with which to conclude the book, the contents of the two chapters beforehand, chapters 11 and 12, seem to just simply be placed immediately beforehand. Okay, let's begin with Pasuk Aleph. Ve'ela ha-Kohanim v'ha-Levim asher alu im Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel v'Yeshua. These are the Kohanim and the Levim who went up with Zerubbabel and with Yeshua. Now remember, this is around the same time period as Ezra Perek 2. And then it goes on to list these individuals by name, most of whom are the same as in Ezra Perek Bet, but some of them are actually different. And that continues through verse 7. So Psukim 1 through 7 lists all the different families of sections of Kohanim with 24 mishmarot. Mishmarot were shifts or subdivisions of all Kohanim within the Mikdash. In truth, this entire chapter is just a long parak of 47 verses of lists of names and of the sanctifying, the dedication of the sanctification of the walls. So it's interesting that the first in the census are the Kohanim who arrive late, and then it's going to list the Levim and the families of Kohanim. It doesn't really give us a list of heads of Levim because the Levim per se arrived late, if you remember back from Ezra chapter 8. They only showed up later, these Levim. Some came from Kasifia, and therefore they could not be listed as the first leaders. Okay, verses 8 and 9 were also subdivided into 24 categories of Mishmarot to those who were the Levim. And there were much, much fewer Levim than there were Kohanim. And verses 10 through 11 list six generations of high priests, of Kohanim Gedolim, son after son, who presided. Malbim tells us that according to Chazal, it's actually really hard to imagine how there were six generations in such a short time span. But Yehoshua, who was the original Kohen Gadol, who returned after the Cyrus Declaration, must have been very, very old when he began the Aliyah process and his time period in office. If we skip then to verse 24 to 26, Chavdal to Chavav, Chavdal tells us, V'rashei ha-Levim, Chashavia, Sheravia, V'yeshua ben Kadmiel, V'achem, L'negdam. It lists the heads of these Levim. And it tells us, what do they do? Lehalel, lehodot, they are singing and praising, b'mitzvat David ish Elokim, according to the command of David HaMelech, the man of God, mishmar l'umat mishmar, subdivision by subdivision they sang. So apparently David HaMelech, King David, established 24 shifts of Kohanim, and they sang his songs, which were unmistakably the book of Psalms. So the Minchat Chinuch, which is a commentary to the Sefer HaChinuch, deals with questions that actually arise from various categories of mitzvot that seem to cut to the core about what the mitzvah is about. And in there, we're told that these Levim sang whatever they wished to sing. That was the main idea for most of the years, until they adopted David HaMelech's Book of Tehillim. But singing, in essence, as part of temple service was biblical, but using Tehillim as the text was something rabbinic in nature. So it's interesting to note that here in Nehemiah, when we know it's a time period, we're really moving to a Torah lifestyle based on the prototype of rabbinic legislation as opposed to biblical. Okay, so essentially verses 22 to 26 discusses the heads of Levim, and there's a bunch of new names that did not appear back in Ezra Perek 2, because many of the names listed here came as part of, generation 2. They were not those who made Aliyah back with Zerubbabel, at least according to the Malbim, and the Kohanim here are listed in annals of the Persian list as supporters of the state. And the Persians were really masters of keeping record. Babylon had demanded huge taxes, which destroyed the the Israeli people to begin with, but Persia was not the same way. They allowed us to keep our lifestyle, but they wanted to keep a close eye on leadership and accounting just in case there would be some kind of a misadministration. So the record keeping here really is spot on. In truth, if you took like look at the two lists, next to each other, Ezra Perek 2 and Nehemiah chapter 12, you see that the list here is actually quite imprecise. But most of the classical commentaries stick with their typical methodological approaches when dealing with the changes in the two lists. So I'll just mention them, by ideology, so to speak. So the Metudat David says we really should not get bogged down by nuanced differences, that it doesn't really matter. The Malbim, in typical Malbim fashion, says no, we have to resolve every detail and he'll fit in every potential midrash he can find just to figure out how to read the nuanced differences in Nehemiah and make sure there are no mistakes. Rabag seems to tell us that we should not get hung up on the number of shifts of group of people because it's possible that one shift joined another shift. So the changes are just because things happened over time that we just couldn't keep hold of. The entire list here of the Aliyah process ends in the end of Pasuk 26, and it lets us, the list basically ends with Ezra HaSofer. As you can see, Ubiyamei Nehemiah HaPecha, Nehemiah the governor, Ezra HaKohen HaSofer. Now, after this first section of the Perek, starting Pasuk 27, Chav Zayin, is Chanukat Chomot Yerushalayim, the dedication and the sanctification of the walls of Jerusalem, where we get a first-person speaker, probably Nehemiah, and this part of the chapter deals with all of those who participated in this really celebratory dedication of the walls of Jerusalem. So Nehemiah gathers many Kohanim and Leviim to bring all these instruments for a huge bash, and people purify themselves and the gates of the city, and they divide the people into two groups, as we'll see, one is going to be led by Ezra and one by Nehemiah and the Sanhedrin, and they are going to meet at the eastern gate outside of the temple. People actually follow these leaders around and above the walls in this really carnival-like procession. It's a tremendous simcha, and if you pay attention, you'll notice that the word simcha, meaning happiness, is utilized, I think, 5, if not more, times in the section. Rav Sadia Gaon tells us that the date of this procession is the 4th of Elul, which is when they finished the walls and they finished also the security aspect. And maybe they waited until now to do the dedication because they needed the spiritual fortification of leadership to be completed in order for them to sanctify and dedicate the wall. Okay, I'll begin. Pasuk Chav Zayin, Ubichanukat Chomat Yerushalayim, and at the dedication of the walls of Jerusalem, Bikshu et ha-Leviim mikol mekomotam, they sought out Leviim from wherever they were, Lahaviam, to bring the Leviim liYerushalayim to Jerusalem, Laasot Chanukah, to make this dedication, V'simcha ubetodot ubeshir, with joy and with thanksgiving and with songs, Mitzaltayim, with cymbals, Nivalim, psalteries, it's a kind of a harp, Ubechinorot, and lyres, all these different kinds of instruments. So the ritual for the wall dedication for temple makes sense, but this is not a wall. This is not the temple. This is a wall. And they already made the Chanukat HaBayit, the dedication party, well back in Ezra Perek 6 for the Beit HaMikdash. So what's going on here? The whole reason Nehemiah even made Aliyah was for the wall's dedication and to rebuild the walls and so that they wouldn't be vulnerable anymore living in Yerushalayim. So it makes sense that he made this big party. But the question is, was this Hanukkah celebration, was this dedication necessary or was it merely symbolic? It's the same ceremony that they did for the temple, but there's a different level of kedusha, of holiness here. And essentially, there are hierarchies, the Gemara teaches us. For example, one of the hierarchies involves the tithe of Maaser Sheni, the second tithe, that in order for it to be given, the city has to be consecrated. On the other hand, there are some sacrifices that are only able to be eaten in the Temple Mount. And since we're not exactly sure where the demarcation is of the Temple Mount versus the city walls, this needed to be done. Rashi tells us that now during this dedication ceremony, they added areas to Jerusalem. And since Jerusalem had rules for eating, the sanctified meat, hekdesh, they needed to consecrate these new areas. It wasn't really about the wall. It was about figuring out where they could eat their sacrificial meat. And this is actually based on a Mishnah in the Gemara in Shavuos, which is about how we can define different spaces that are holy and therefore enter them with impurity. The Rambam Maimonides rules that it wasn't really necessary, and there are those commentaries that actually disagree tremendously. And this debate about whether or not it mattered, whether or not areas of the city were sanctified now, the debate really matters a lot. Going up to Temple Mount is today, which is a huge debate amongst the religious and the non-religious and all philosophical on the left and the right, that debate still continues today about whether or not we can go up on the Temple Mount and where the boundaries of holiness end. So the upshot is that it's not really Nehemiah creating a ritual because he's really proud of his wall, but it's a consecration of the city, either because the sanctity, the Kedusha is gone and they need to rededicate it, or they're trying to encourage the people as a demonstration to be very proud of everything that they had accomplished. Okay, so they walk around the city walls, they remove all the carcasses that are there and any other impurities, and they can proceed with this procession. Pasuk Kaf Chet and Pasuk Kaf Tet, 28 and 29, let us know that they gather the singers from the gate, from the gates of the city and from the plaza areas where they were all hanging out. And Pasuk Chaf Tet, very interesting, tells us that they gathered them ki chatzeirim banu, that these people built courtyards, lahem ha-mishorim svivot, they had built courtyards to sing right outside the walls of Yerushalayim, and they had to gather them now to come to this procession. So it's actually quite ironic that we get all these singers building outside areas like plazas and courtyards in order to sing outside of Jerusalem after he fortifies the cities, but it seems like these Levim and these singers, all they want to do is have a kumzitz and sing, which is interesting to see the spiritual side of them. Okay, Pasuk Lamed, verse 30, Vayitaharu HaKohanim VaHaLevim, the Kohanim and the Levim purify themselves, and then they also purify Et HaSha'arim VeEt HaChomot, they purify Et HaChoma, they purify the gates and the wall. So how do you purify gates? Rashi tells us that they sanctified the city by guarding the entrance and the exit of people. They kept a close eye on them, making sure that they weren't bringing in a lot of uncleanliness into the city. I mean, you know what happens when you have a huge carnival or a parade or a busy day, you know, the trash is all over the place, and they actually were there to kind of make sure that wouldn't happen, and also to make sure nothing inappropriate was brought inside. Okay, so what is this procession actually all about? The Malbim tells us that they, the people received two different todot offerings, which were the bread offerings of Thanksgiving, and the carrying them, they walked beside each other in groups or in sequence, and one of these todot offerings, the breads, were eaten, and one of them ended up being burnt. It's clear that half the group went from left to right around the city, and half the group went from right to left. Nehemiah's house, as we see earlier in the chapters of Nehemiah, was in Shar Hagai, which is kind of in the middle of the western gate. And from there, they started their walking around the city. Half walk to the right to Shar Ashbot, to the steps where Ir David is, if you're familiar with the geography of the city, near the southwest edge of the city. And from there, they walk the entire south side, west to east, and then they come to Shar HaMayim, the water gate, which is in the southeast. And those who walked from right to left walked from Shar HaGai, which is Nehemiah's house, to the Migdal Tanurim, the oven area, on the northwest. And from there, they walk from the west to the east along the north, and then they ended up meeting, the two groups together met in Shar HaMatara, another area. In Pasuk Lamed Vav and Lamed Zion, we're kind of told what happens. Once again, that they are singing and playing the instruments with the songs of David, Melech, the king, David Ish Elokim, the man of God, Ve'ezra HaSofer Lifneim. It is very clear that Ezra is leading one of these groups. Now, the Mishnah in Shavuos, as I said earlier, says that you cannot extend the sanctity of the walls unless you have either a king, a prophet, Urim v'Tumim, which is the breastplate on the Kohen, and the Sanhedrin of 71 men, plus these two loaves of bread, and the Beit Din, the Supreme Court, so to speak, is accompanying them. So the sanctity of the land already had dissipated during the time of the Babylonian conquest, and now they are re-sanctifying it, which is called Kedusha Shnia, a second sanctification, which is happening right now during Nehemiah, which is why they needed all this pomp and circumstance, which really allows for more lenience later on with Kachim and the eating of the sacrificial meat. Because even though you can potentially reverse a conquest, as Yehoshua did when they first entered the land in the book of Joshua, this new sanctification is really a watershed moment in terms of halacha and in matters of spirituality. So these lachmei toda, these 40 loaves of Thanksgiving bread, according to Malbim, there were 5 loaves of each type of category of 10, and they were taken around the city for this parade, and they're divided in two, and then they come back around the circle and they all meet up together. Okay, and then we see Pasuk Mem Aleph through Mem Gemel tells us, you know, the ending of this parade. But if you notice the consistency of the word Simcha, Simcha, Vayismachu Kelokim, Simcham, Simcha Gdola, they are so happy because Hashem made them to be happy and allowed for their happiness. V'gam Hanashim V'Hailadim Samechu, and even the women and the children are happy. V'Tishma Simchat Yerushalayim Merachok, and the joys of celebration and the sound of the joy is heard even from a distance. Now this is a little bit of deja vu, this kind of ceremony sound. So this ceremony, which seems to have consisted of trumpet blowing and singing of the songs of psalms and marching around the city, really resembles, hence the deja vu, the celebration that we saw in the third chapter of Ezra. But here, Ezra is actually leading the parade, and there are two groups, Nehemiah one and him the other, and they're walking all around, and they're giving these korbanot, and they come to the gate of the guards, Shaar HaMatara. So among the many similarities we see between this perek and perek 3 of Ezra, there is a tremendous difference. And I think this last pasuk that we read really highlights it. Vatishma simchat Yerushalayim merachok, that the sound of celebration is heard from a distance. So what is this tremendous difference? In Nehemiah, it seems like the joy is unmitigated. And in Ezra, if you recall, that joy was really muted by the sobbing of those who had witnessed the first temple's grandeur. And in truth, the confused emotions back in Ezra Paragimel and the cacophony of those sounds, you know, those who were celebrating amidst those who were weeping, really clouded Ezra's festivities in the book of Ezra, which is why ultimately they had to get the Navi Haggai to come and urge the Jews to start building again. And I think underscoring this difference is the number of times we see the word Simcha here in our context, 5 or 6 times, yet back in Sefer Ezra, we only see it 2 times. That also maybe accounts for the very strange placement of the ceremony at the very end of this Sefer, as opposed to earlier where we saw the chapters 3 and 4, the actual building of the walls, which is probably where we would have expected to see this dedication procession. So I think the celebration only appears here towards the end of Nehemiah, probably because this inauguration brings like a degree of closure to the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, hinting that we're really intended to view the two protagonists, both Ezra and Nehemiah, as having operated under one continuum. Okay, the very last few psukim Mem Dalet through Mem Zayim, 44 to 47, the end of this parak is essentially about tax collection for Kohanim and Leviim. Notice that in Pasuk Mem Dalet, once again, we have the word Kisimchat Yehuda ala Kohanim, that once again, they are so joyous and joyful for the Kohanim and the Leviim who are doing their job. So this establishment of Nehemiah, what he was going for in these few psukim is that he's making sure the people are contributing their donations to the Kohanim and Leviim as they're supposed to. So there were actually men who were selected to be in charge of various chambers for the storage of maaser, for the tithes and the truma, the donations, because the Kohanim and the Leviim were really busy doing their jobs. So until now, what used to happen is you would give your tithe to the Levi, and the Levi would give the gift to the Kohen. Now everything was brought to these office, and the office men would divvy it all out as appropriate. And so the truth is, what's the business of the joy here of the nation, of the Kohanim and Leviim? Why are they, what are they rejoicing about? I mean, all they're really doing is giving in taxes. We don't make parties when we pay our taxes. So what is the big deal here with this new system? So in truth, we can try to picture Nehemiah as the ultimate office worker. He really institutes this new payroll system. So there's central control, yes, but there's actually more than that. So the Mitzudat Avid tells us that since their joy was so great and they were especially pleased with the service of the Kohanim and Leviim, people started to grow cautious and attentive to make sure that the temple workers received their due. They wanted to keep the Kohanim and Leviim doing their job as happily, so they made sure to pay them. Rabbag says something similar but adds to it. He says that Nehemiah wanted the gifts of and the tithes for the Leviim and the Kohanim to arrive at the right time, so that the Leviim would then be available to do their work in the temple, and they would not need to go around collecting their salaries that are rightfully due them in the first place. More importantly, I think it's important to note that the Kohen and Levi can only do their job if they don't have to be busy collecting, and then they can actually show up for work. So the people were very careful about these gifts. And I think it's important to mention this because it's a rare moment in Tanakh when everyone is really doing what they're supposed to do. You know, if only we could take a picture and freeze this moment in time. It's almost like in the book of Kings, Sefer Malachim Aleph, in the first book of Kings, chapter 10, when the Queen of Sheba shows up and she sees everything that's happening during the time of Shlomo HaMelech after the construction of the first temple, and she says that what she heard was untrue. If anything, it was even better than what she had heard. So this miraculous moment in time when we're all doing what we're supposed to and we're on the same page, whether it's financially or spiritually, religiously, halachically, militarily, it all just was working. And I think it's really wonderful to freeze this moment, especially before all the excess and the problems that we'll learn about tomorrow in the last chapter of Nehemiah. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmas, Malka Esther, Batzvi Yosef.